So you're paying £650 a month, and how much rent do you get?
In April, we made £2,500 profit off that one.
Damn. So what was your first deal, and how did it come about?
Funnily enough, from your Instagram story.
You're paying £800 a month, and then you just rented it for £6,000 for a week.
You haven't got a business unless it's systemized. You've got a job.
You thought you had a construction company, now you don't. You own your own job.
Negotiated £7,000 off the asking price with refurbs, £18,000, and they should refinance for £145,000.
How much is your property company on average making a month?
It's been doing £13,000 a month up until May, which we did £27,000.
That's enough to buy a house. Kenny and Carl, thanks so much for coming down to my house. I wanted to interview you because you are a father and son duo. What you've done over the last year in property, how you've scaled up, forward thinkingness of your property business is absolutely admirable. And I thought I'd pick your brain on what you've done, what's working, what's not working. But firstly, congratulations on all your success in property.
Thank you. Cheers.
How did this all start then? What happened? I know you've got a construction company, but
what's... So Kenny sort of had a resin business doing resin floors, which wasn't going very well. And he was a bit down in the dumps. So I said, right, we need to do something together. Have a look at this guy, being Samuel Leeds. When you've had a look, come back to me and see what you want to do. So he came back to me and said, let's book that £1 session. And then from there, we came down to Heathrow.
And when you showed your son Kenny and you're like, you need to go to the property investor crash course, were you thinking for yourself as well that you wanted to do that?
Oh, or yeah,
were you
more... I was absolutely in.
Okay, so you were like, I need to get into property.
But I wanted to do this together, and I wanted to be a business built from scratch that he put loads of input in, so he wasn't a silver spoon boy. He was coming out and he was making his own money.
Why do you think so many people in the construction business have this sort of old school? Because I get a lot of people that, you know, even comments, people say, oh, I've been in the construction business for years. Oh, rent to rents, it's all nonsense. There's this sort of like old school mentality, I think, within the construction business. And where do you think that comes from?
I think it's probably because you end up repairing so many trashed properties, but you don't see the good ones. So you get it in your mind that they're all like that, and that's it. But they're not. There's millions of them out there, but you only remember the horror stories.
Yeah. So you came down then, so you got your construction business, and you had your struggling flooring business that you wanted to jack in. How did you feel at that point, Kenny? What was
all in, like, regardless of whether I thought, you know, the crash course was any good, property was, I was going to do that.
Yeah.
We were going to do that.
Did you know at the time what your strategy was going to be, or were you still figuring that out?
We had an inkling towards deal sourcing. That was sort of what we wanted to do. Obviously, since then, we've gone through the mill and the trials and tribulations of being an Academy member and what different strategies there are in all these different pots. And we've come out at the back end where we are. So.
And what are you doing now then? What's your main focus? Where's most of the money coming from?
Now deal selling, but also rent to rents.
So what was your first deal and how did it come about?
So, funnily enough, from your story, your Instagram story, a guy messaged me and said, look, I was scrolling through 36 different stories and for some reason I just stopped on yours. So he reached out to me and said, I'm looking for a buy-to-let, da-da-da. So then I found him one, but I said, it needs £8,000 worth of refurb to get it to the point that you want it in terms of the rent. So he's like, fine. As we were going along, before we got to any important stage, so we're just on the rip-out and whatever, I said to him, why don't we rent this off you? As a rent-to-rent, we'll give you what you want for it, so you're making your profit. We'll increase it by 3.5% each year, so we stay in line with inflation, whatever. And then we will use it as a service accommodation for contractors. And he was like, bingo, let's do it.
So hold on, this is crazy. So this was the deal selling masterclass?
No, you just reshared something that I'd put and tagged you in.
Okay.
And he stopped on it for some reason. And I'm quite a big believer of like the universe and law of attraction and stuff like that, so I think it could be something to do with that, I don't know.
So he saw your potential deal, and what was it? Was it like a buy-to-let?
The deal was just a standard buy-to-let.
So he wanted a buy-to-let, it was our first investor on board.
Yeah.
Kenny brought him on, we found the deal, and then we said, we'll take the deal off you. So you buy it, refurb it, and then we'll rent it back off you for 3 years.
Okay.
So it's a double deal.
Yeah. So you're getting a fee, but then he's getting a guaranteed rent, which means you're getting a rent to rent.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
But what we did is then we could decide what we wanted to do on the building work to make it more appealing as a rent to rent.
Well, the thing is with property is the pie is big enough for everyone to get paid. You know, and you can get paid as a deal sourcer, he can get paid as a passive investor. The pie is big enough. So how much did he pay you as a sourcer's fee?
£2,000 for the sourcing fee, £1,200 for the project management, And then we actually added £35,000 worth of equity in 3 weeks, which is £27,000 net.
And how much rent are you paying him?
£650.
So you're paying £650 a month, and how much rent do you get?
In April, we made £2,500 profit off that one.
Damn. So the big question is then, that a lot of people say is, why doesn't he just rent it out himself as serviced accommodation? And this comes up all the time, because whenever you're doing a rent-to-rent, if you're renting a property and you're renting out as serviced accommodation, everyone says, why doesn't the landlord do it? What would your answer be to that?
A bit weary of chancing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. I think they don't know if they could quite cope with the management system.
Yeah, it's time-consuming, isn't it?
Time-consuming, yeah.
And also, I guess as well, in a similar way, you could say that about anything, couldn't you? Like the hotel business. When Premier Inn rent a building and then run it as a Premier Inn and make a fortune, you could say, well, why doesn't just the owner run it as a hotel? Well, they don't know how. They don't know the systems, the procedures, the processes.
You've got to have the desire.
Yeah.
Without the desire, you're not going to do it. But you've got the desire to do it.
Because you've got to find cleaners, key boxes, working on online travel agencies and Avivo channel managers, synchronizing calendars.
Noise monitors.
Noise monitors. Yeah. If you don't know how to do it, I mean, you know, you've been trained, you've got the business in a box, you've got all the processes, you've got community, mentors, and you've made a success of it. But most people, it's just too daunting, isn't it?
Too daunting.
Yeah.
And we've learned the hard way through the noise monitors as well.
Well, go on, tell me.
We've got an apartment that has one above, and it's actually above a funeral director's. So that means super quiet in the day, super quiet at night for the guys upstairs. And I got a call at like 2 a.m. saying the downstairs are doing this and that, they're shouting and screaming. And I was just like, ugh. And with the landlord, I'd actually agreed that we would put a sound monitor in, but I forgot to do it. That was my mess up. So I then had to, you know, grovel a little bit, saying really sorry, this and that. But the guests were saying, we never did anything. So obviously now I've got to be like, well, I can't charge them because they said they haven't done anything. I've got no noise monitors to prove it. And the Ring doorbell wasn't charged. So that's something you don't
need.
So
really we have to take it on the chin. Our fault, we'll put it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that actual apartment is in a place where the Open is going to be, the Golf Open. Mm. And we've let that out for the Golf Open for 1 week.
Cool.
£6,000.
£6,000.
For a week?
For a week.
And how much rent are you paying to the landlord?
£800.
So you're paying £800 a month, and then you just rented it for £6,000 for a week?
For a week, yeah.
Damn, that is nuts.
And it turns its wheels anyway without that, but that's just like Brucey bonus, isn't it?
And you've got a BRR going on at the moment. Talk to me a bit about that.
So that is literally like 4 minutes away from Liverpool Tunnel. It's going to be a serviced accommodation. I sourced it for them. We negotiated £7,000 off the asking price, which is nice. The refurb's £18,000, and they should refinance for £145,000.
How do you juggle then, doing like deal sourcing, rent? I mean, you've got what, Barnston property sourcing, and then you've got Barnston construction. You're doing your rent to rent, serviced accommodation. How do you kind of find the time and balance all of that? And also working together as well. How do you split the responsibilities up and work together?
Yeah, so the building company is now more systemized. Put some foremen in place.
Yeah.
They're running the jobs. So I'm less on site. So I've got more time to spend with Kenny, talking about business plans and where we're going this week, and we'll have a project for the month ahead. Kenny will do the social media side in his time and in his work hours, and he'll do the viewings, but we're also just now training up another guy to deal source as well. So he's going to do the deal sourcing for us while we're bringing the investors on board.
How much is your property company on average making a month? In profit after all your costs?
So we didn't make any money up until January. So we had that long slug of a few months where we didn't make any money. But since then, it's been doing 13,000 a month up until May, which we did 27,000 from mid-May to June.
Wow. What makes you so successful? Just seem like a normal father and son, doing your thing. Like, how are you making so much money? 27 grand in that amount of time. And is nuts.
I actually think you've just said it. I think the fact that we are just normal blokes.
We've got a belief that we're going to do. We came away, we've took what we wanted from the course, took the golden nuggets and worked away at them and made them work. You've got to know the nuggets and where they are and which ones to pull out.
Yeah. What were some of the big like aha moments for you, where some of the things that you learned and you were like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a game changer?
Systemization.
Right. Talk to me about that.
So systemization, I think it was Tony said it on stage, and he said, you haven't got a business unless it's systemized. Right. You've got a job. And I sat there and it was went, bing, I've got a job.
You thought you had a construction company, now you don't. You own your own job.
I had a full-time own job. That's all that went through my mind for a couple of months. How do we change this? What do we do? And completely changed my mindset to bring me to where I am now and evolve this business with Kenny.
How did you, Carl? How did you systemize the construction side? Because it's not easy. I mean, I know in the building game, everybody wants you. Trying to get employees and staff is very difficult in the building business. Yeah. How have you managed to do that?
Well, we've got a great team of lads. We really have. So one of the guys pulled him to the side straight away as soon as I got back and said, do you want more responsibility? Obviously with more money, and you run the jobs for me so I don't have to turn up on the site,
yeah.
Which then gives us more time for deal sourcing and essays.
So you pay him a little bit more money, but now you've got your time back.
And it's not as chaotic because I'm not trying to do everything.
What would you say though, because I have so many builders that say to me, Samuel, you don't understand, I can't outsource this stuff, I can't systemize it because all my clients just want me. How did you deal with that?
It's not true, it's in your own head though.
I agree. It is. It's their ego. They think, oh, they only want me because I'm so wonderful.
I can't let go. Yeah, you don't cut that like that.
Do you think really they're just control freaks?
Yeah, as long as the end product is right.
And the thing is, the client might have a slight preference. Like we've got a builder that we use who project manages everything, right, on our projects around here. And I really like him. His name's Andy. Really like Andy, trust him. He's a brilliant builder and he manages the team well. If Andy turned around to me one day and just said, oh, Pete's gonna now be doing my job, I might be a bit like, ooh, unsure. But Andy needs to educate me and show me and prove that Pete's good. And if Pete comes along and actually wows me and does a good job, okay. So really it's about just replacing yourself and setting the expectations right with your customers.
Yeah, so my customers, they're not employing me, they're employing our company.
Right.
And we're overseeing it, that all the guys that work for the company work under our umbrella.
So you just need to make sure the job gets done well.
And they all go through a training matrix as well, anyway, on top of all
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so you have to train them well.
So we're training them, we've got them going through all the asbestos awareness, working from heights, SMSTS. So we've got a proper system in place, so we're making sure that, you know, everyone knows what they're doing completely. We're not just going to start smashing holes in an Artex ceiling, which is full of asbestos.
How does it feel, Carl, to have systemised your building business?
Absolutely amazing, yeah. I feel I've got my life back.
That's awesome. Congrats on that.
Yeah, thanks.
That's a huge achievement.
Yeah.
How many hours do you have to spend a week now on your construction business?
Probably still putting 2 days in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what were you doing before?
Nine
days. Did it feel like that?
Yeah.
Full time.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. That's huge. Yeah. And with yourself as well, Kenny, you're kind of the front guy on social media. I see you doing the post, getting the investors and things like that. How is it working together, like as like a duo family business?
Yeah, it's ace. Because there's no one I trust more than him. So. You know, and naturally, you know, we're two males as well, so sometimes we do clash heads, naturally, but it always ends in a nice open discourse. Okay, what's the best resolve? We'll agree on it, move forward. Mm-hmm. That's done then. There's no, you know, lumps in the carpet, like, it all gets ironed out straight away.
And that's the same with me and my brother. We're business partners, and we have a rule, which is what's best for the business.
Yes.
Because if you're always saying what's best for me, or you're trying to be selfish, or it's like, actually, what's best for the business? Business comes first.
Yes.
And everything has to be fair. And if there's problems, then you just address it. You have to quickly resolve things. Communication is important. Do you guys have like an organizational structure where you have who's doing what, who's responsible for what?
Yeah. Good. So pretty much I will get the business and bring it in. Once I've got the client on the hook, say, and we have a Zoom call, I'll bring Dad in. We'll do a Zoom call together because, you know, I want people to feel he's a credible source of information for building. I'll handle the property source and stuff, and we come together like that.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
What are you most excited about with the construction business, rent to rent, and building your own portfolio of BRRs? Like, which is the most exciting?
So I think going to our own portfolio, when I say our own, which we own, which we've done from scratch, it's not, I'm not putting the money in, Kenny and I have worked, brought that in with that turnover we've just told you, and we're going to buy our first property this year, and then we're going to leverage that property and keep going.
Do the works, refinance it.
Yeah, but we'll probably put sweat money into that one and do a lot of the building work to make it more fruitful.
So that 27 grand, was that over just a month period?
It was sort of like 6 weeks.
And how much of that was profit?
That's profit.
Damn, that's enough to buy a house.
But then we've also agreed on rent to rent, so now it's like, oh, well, we've got to furnish them, and it comes down the pot, as you know. And also, that 27 grand's not guaranteed next month. You know, like, we're not taking 27 grand wage or anything like that.
We're reinvesting.
Back in the business.
Yes.
It's all going back in.
Yeah. Of course. And that's the way it should be.
It's going to work for us. And in 10 years, it'll be working a lot better.
Go on, make 27 grand, go on holiday and have a great time, buy a car. But actually, you're wanting to put that into something that's going to give you a passive income.
Which is hopefully the rent-to-rents. But what we want to move into is doing JV developments, because we build new build houses anyway. So why can't we leverage that skill? Bring other people in on the finance side. Like, we were literally looking at a deal right now, aren't we?
Yeah, I've got going to look at one on Monday, which is a plot of land in an area where they sell for about 1.6 million per year, which is high end for the area.
It sounds high for Liverpool.
Yeah, we're looking, it's got planning permission already, but the garden next door has also got the house next door is really needs knocking down, but that's going to come as the package, so there'll be two plots.
Right.
So it could be a £4 or 5 million deal.
How are you finding these deals? Like, even the rent-to-rents and the BRRs and the development deals, are you finding them through estate agents? Are you finding them off-market, networking events?
Yeah, both really. Because we sell houses for estate agents, naturally they're going to come to us straight away because they don't have to market it then if they can sell their deal for them. Also family, friends, you know, people see what we're doing on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, and then networking events like your courses.
What about the investors? How are you finding these investors? Where are they coming from?
Word of mouth.
Can you explain?
Well, so say if they come through Instagram, which some of them do, or the academy or whatever, then I'll actually put them in touch with previous investors and say, speak to them, ask them what you thought of me. They won't hold anything back. And then all of a sudden, they call me back and say, yeah, let's do it.
So you're using like referrals and recommendations for your inquiries?
Yes.
And where would you say most of the focus is then on the property business? If you had to sort of sourcing, rent to rent, developments?
Sourcing.
But the great thing about sourcing is, if you're sourcing deals, if you're finding something, you can keep it, you can partner, you can sell it. The biggest problem people have in this business, I think, is being able to source good deals. Because everyone thinks, oh, I haven't got the money. Oh, I haven't got any investors. I haven't. Well, you ain't even got the deals. I could give you 150 grand right now and you wouldn't have the first clue what to do with it. So the real trick of the game is being able to find the deals, know what a good deal is, know how to crunch the numbers, know where to look, how to spot the opportunities. I think that's the biggest key. So what tips would you have from your experience, both in construction but also in the business of property, about knowing what to look for in a good deal? How do you know if a deal's a good deal or not?
I think you've got to be realistic about your construction costs. Like, do not try and inflate those numbers to make it work.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, move on.
Or inflating the end value because one freaky house sold for 300 grand, but realistically, they're all selling for 260.
And that's tough, isn't it?
Get your
looking for your GDV,
right.
It's tough.
That's do your research, part. Isn't it? Do your research, get your data right.
And also, you've got to add in contingency and stuff, haven't you, as well, with any job? You've got to make sure your numbers are really right.
Yeah, so we always knock off like 10% for our GDV. And refurb, you've got your builder cost, and then you've got your 15% profits, 5% contingency, and then even VAT. People miss on VAT, and it's like, what, I've got to pay 5 grand extra?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have you agreed any purchase lease options yet?
Close, weren't we? Close. We've had talks, and we've been in a situation where they may have gone, but we've done the figures and walked away in the end.
You keep saying this, and it's so important. I think being prepared to walk away is so important, because I've seen a lot of people, especially inexperienced people that aren't really trained or educated, they're quite emotional and they'll get emotionally attached to a deal and then they'll fudge the figures to make it work because really their heart's saying yes. But the biggest tip is fill your pipeline. If you've got 20 deals on, I bet you right now, I bet you guys have got at least 10 different potential deals on the table right now.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that way, oh, well, that one doesn't work. That one doesn't work. If you've only got one in your pipeline, you're desperate for it to work, because if it doesn't work, then you've got nothing.
Yeah, that's
correct. You're trying to set out, you want to get going.
Yeah.
You need that deal, you'll do anything for it to work.
But you can't be a motivated investor. You have to be a smart investor dealing with motivated sellers.
Well, we do an exercise called I Think I Know. So we'll write it on the whiteboard and we'll get all the I thinks about it. and we'll just chuck them in the bin and just put I knows on the board, and then we'll make a decision.
Right.
And we do that all the time, don't we? Pretty much every day.
But you know how many deal sources sell with I think? They'll say, oh, I think that they're going to be bringing in a new train station, and we think that the market value will go up over the next 3 years. You don't know that.
It's nonsense.
Yeah. Talk a bit about as well the difference between, because this is a mad one important for deal sources, the difference between the asking price and the true current market value.
It's very difficult at the moment because there's limited properties on the market. So to actually pull a below market value is difficult.
Yeah.
I always do a square meterage. So I want to know how much you're paying per square meter in that area on average this year.
Yeah.
Look at the asking price. If it's way overinflated, but if it's justified because it's really nice inside, this is not extension, then you can be like, right, okay, that's justified. But if it isn't, then you know, hang on a second, that's not the current market value.
Yeah.
It should be this.
Yeah, because one of the things that novices do is there'll be a property on the market for 150, and then they'll negotiate to buy it for 130. I got 20 grand below market value. But actually, when you look at it, and you look at the comparable prices, it's only worth 130. So actually, it's not 20 grand below market value, it's 20 grand below asking price. But asking price, it's irrelevant what they could be asking £1 million. But at the same time, they can be the other way around. Like I've seen investors or novices, they're looking at a property for 150 grand, and actually, it's on the market for 150, but the seller's motivated, and really it's worth 165, but it's on cheap. But then they'll put in a cheeky offer of 125, and it's like, no, it's already cheap. Like, what are you doing? So being able to calculate that figure, I think, is really important. What have been some of the biggest learning points for you then, Kenny, in doing what you've been doing with getting investors and selling deals? What have been some of the biggest learning points?
Probably to be a bit more thick-skinned, to be honest. Naturally, I'm quite a sensitive, emotional person. So when you get that no, first deal that we sold and got the money in the bank for was a BRR in Liverpool, and the comparable we used was in the road next door, but that was a different postcode. So the investor was like, no, I want my money back. That's not secure and safe enough. But it was a like for like property next road. So I sent them the money back and I said to my dad, I was like, oh, dad, it's not working, this and that. Now I've come through the trials and tribulations of that. I'm a bit like, no, hang on a sec. I know to put all my due diligence in a pack. Our packs sometimes are like 50 pages deep, you know, for bigger deals, which a lot of people be like, can't read that. But if you say the information's not there, I can guarantee you it is. So take your time to read the pack, see the information. That's probably the biggest learning curve I've had.
Also, we've done the job, pay us. Not in 3 months.
Which you're great at.
We're done.
Oh, I'm the master.
Yeah, the master,
we've done all that work for you. Pay us.
Yeah.
It's quite easy.
Yeah, right. Because people say, oh, I'll pay you on completion. But I've already done the work.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You can pay me now. If you're not happy when you're doing your due diligence and the survey or whatever, you've got a 14-day call-off period. What did you learn at the Deal Selling Masterclass? And what did you think when you saw me live just selling deals over and over and over again? Because I don't think people quite, until you've actually experienced it. When I tell people, come on the program, bring deals, and you'll see me ringing investors, selling the deal, live. I don't think people quite believe it.
I thought it was ace because you, the way you do it, it's killer. Like, get it done. And you've actually got to be like that. In this industry, it's so competitive. And then watching you do that live on stage made me realize, right, I can do it. I just need to be a little bit more hard-faced about it.
You have to be able to close the deal. Some people just can't. And in England, we're very polite. But you have to be able to actually be direct. This is the deal. What are your thoughts? It looks great. Perfect. My fee's £3,000. How do you feel about that? That sounds reasonable. Great. How would you like to pay?
I do need to refresh on that. The way we do it now is purely bespoke.
Okay.
But, which has good points.
Yeah, it does. I like bespoke.
The bad points about it, I think, is that you can't push out deals en masse. It's all, you know, I go and look at it. We price up the refurb. We do the work.
Yeah.
A lot, very time consuming.
We need to do some deals where we don't include the builder's work. Yeah. So we've come up with a new strategy for that.
Go on.
So the new strategy is, this is what we think you can do the builder's work and project manage it yourself.
Yeah.
This is what we think you can do it using us, and this is the fee, and it's going to be quite a large fee on top to use us to project manage and bring that in on.
If you want that security, that you've got professionals doing the job.
Paid for it then.
Yeah.
Because I'm in construction, as you know, and Kenny works for the construction company too, but I know over the years I get a lot more for building an extension and refurb and a buy-to-let.
Of course. Of course.
Because I can allow time for a foreman, prelim costs, washrooms, toilets, etc. You ain't getting that on a buy-to-let.
And it depends on how much they value their time.
Yeah.
If somebody lives local and they've got the time, they'll say, no, actually, I'll book my own electrician, my own plumber, my own this. Yes, they'll all get in each other's way and it'll be a nightmare and I'll have to project manage it. but it'll be a lot cheaper.
Which means then we can sell more deals because there's only so many we can refurb with the team we've got.
It's almost like saying, you know, do you want it done good, cheap, or fast? Which one? Because you can't have all three. Nope. You can't have it done good and cheap and fast.
At the moment, our clients probably are getting that, aren't they?
Yeah, they're getting it cheap and fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good.
But you can't, that's not sustainable. You can't have good food, fast food, and cheap food all at once. You can have it cheap and fast. You can have it good and slow. You can have it good and fast, but then it won't be cheap. So which one do you want? And then let them choose. What's the difference, Kenny, between bespoke deal sourcing and regular deal sourcing?
So regular deal sourcing is where you go, find a deal, package it up, push it out to like a list of investors. Bespoke is where you onboard a client, they pay you a deposit for you to go and actually look for them. You'll have a contract to say how many properties you're going to source in an amount of time and the criteria to work to, which is a framework to protect the sourcer and the client. You'll go and find their property, you'll take the deposit away from the sourcing fee.
Sure.
And then charge them on whatever your terms are. For us, it's sale agreed.
So you're basically selling a deal to an investor when the deal doesn't even exist yet.
Yes.
So they're paying you a fee up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A grand, let's say. And then they'll say, now, this is what I want. This. You'll go find it. And then they'll top up the difference.
That's it, yeah.
The great thing about that is you can use their proof of funds. You can use their photo ID. You know that when you find something good, it's going to sell. What did your family think when you joined the academy and told them that your new venture of property network? Was everyone like, yeah, man, sounds good? Or did they think you were crazy?
I wouldn't say crazy. They were interested.
My nan is like, me and dad's mum, my nan is just on board with anything we say we're going to do it. And she's
your biggest fan. Go for it.
She's on board that she wants essays.
That's great.
Well, that's it. And my granddad is more like, was skeptical, not too sure, but now he's seeing it. He's like, do you know what, boys, well done.
Yeah.
And I want some. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. When you can bring your family in. And it's great working with your family. And it's so nice to have family on board and supporting. A lot of people in your situation, Kenny, their dad will be saying, don't go to that course. Whereas your dad's saying, you have to go.
Yeah.
It's a real good thing.
I'm blessed that I've got the network through the academy. I've got my friends who are sharks as well, winners. So every time I meet them, they're like, you know, tell me what they're doing in their business. And then I go away thinking, yeah, I need to match their energy.
Yeah.
And then I've got my family as well. And my dad, my girlfriend, you know, supporting me. And it's just worth its weight in gold.
What's your experience at the academy been like?
With the network, unbelievable. The training, unbelievable. And you know what? You're held accountable because you paid for it.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. You're around other people. They've all invested. They're all serious. What better place to be, and what better place to find investors as well?
True.
Yeah.
So, well, guys, I'm really pleased to see you winning in business, and congrats on your success. Look forward to seeing your continued success, and thank you so much for coming down from Liverpool.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Thank you. Respect. Well done. Thanks, Kenny.
Cheers,
thank you, Carl.